couple of you prepared ahead of time. And so I think because we're a small group today, we'll do it all together as one big group. So that would be Charlotte. My brother who's not here. My mom didn't finish. She's not here. Jeff? All right. Did anyone else attempt to try questions 3, 4, 5, and 6? That's great. All right. If you gave it a shot at all, can you raise your hand? So, all right, great. So we will let the three of you sort of take the lead, and then the rest of us will sort of follow in and try to fill in some of the gaps. Who had a chance to read it? Genesis 22. Ones in the past. But, oh, wow. So many of you. I'm shocked. This is great. It was last week. All right. So, question number 3. Did we do 3 together? What argument is being advanced by the author to his audience?
We kind of did how you do that, but we didn't do it.
All right. Let's give it a shot. So let's write down in general between Jeff, Charlotte, and Phillips what our emphasis was that you guys had down. I'm just going to jot it down here. We're going to make an argument out of it, and then we're going to move right into question 4. So things that were being emphasized in this passage were
only son.
An only son, right?
Sacrifice is needed.
Provision.
Others, Jeff?
I thought this was what argument is being advanced.
I was just grabbing the emphasis so we can make the argument.
Oh, okay.
One of the things I saw was location.
Further.
Well, just, you know, they're 3 days away, they're going to the place that God showed them,
yeah.
On Moriah.
Yeah, so the structure seems to be progressing by location. And as it's progressing, where does it climax? What location?
Right.
Where?
At the Mount of Moriah.
All right, so maybe this mountain. Provision on the mount of the Lord, right? All right, so let's...
Immediate obedience.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Obedience. What did you say, immediate?
I said immediate obedience.
Immediate. All right, so the author of this, which is Moses and the Holy Spirit, is trying to get across what argument to the Israelites that are hearing this. What is he trying to tell them? What's his aim? What's his purpose? If you were to try to summarize it in one sentence, without referring to Jesus or anything in the New Covenant.
Covenant? Yeah.
Covenant. Mm-hmm. Fill in the emphasis.
Can you put, is testing an emphasis?
It's definitely a setting, and it's... probably the obedience in response to the testing, but we'll just put it in there. All right. So we have all these things up that we saw the passage emphasizing. Let's try to pull it together into one sentence. And let's split into two groups and do it. So everyone over here, grab together, and let's try to make a sentence. If you want to work by yourself or in a group, go for it. And then everyone from Steve over here. Try to make one sentence from the emphasis that Moses is trying to tell his people. I want to try to do the same.
Yeah. Ooh.
Someone needs to just start and throw out a sentence so that other people can chop it in half and add to it. That's how it works.
Okay, I'll throw it out.
Okay.
God is both a just and a merciful God, and he will solemnly be both at the same time for those who believe.
God is what?
God is both a just and a merciful God, and he will sovereignly be both at the same time for those who believe. Or, as we trust and obey God, he will provide all that we need.
God tested Abraham, obeyed.
Both are good.
God provided.
The second one grabs me the most.
Is maybe the Lord will provide too short?
So I ran down, Abraham was tested by God, obeyed even to the point of sacrificing his son, and received incredible promised blessing as a result.
Question.
That's more just staying with the story.
The nation of Israel. And so I'm thinking how you take that truth and what was it?
Well, I mean, what's the purpose of this activity? It's to basically take the whole chapter and summarize it and say.
No, it's really to get what the emphasis is, right? You're working on emphasis?
Yes, so, okay.
So what is the, like, punch of the passage? What is the?
You sat down and told your children bedtime story, right? This is a story that's recounted. It is a historical story.
I'm here. I'm writing down what I hear you guys say.
Oh. It's a historical story, but he's communicating this why. I mean, I got up, I had breakfast, I went to bed. Oh, yeah. But he's sharing this story.
It's like a fable. You read a fable here, it's like it's a story, but there's a.
We have a couple.
There's a reason. There's an emphasis. There's.
It needs to be specific enough to the passage that it clearly comes from this particular passage and not any other passage. It's for the first audience. We'll get to modern readers later, and it should be one single sentence that captures the argument of the passage.
Through obeying God, he will provide blessing.
I put down, God is to be followed even when we do not see a way through.
Okay.
God is to be followed even.
Or obeyed.
Or obeyed.
I wrote down the first sentence.
You've only been why.
Yeah, trusting, yeah.
Or if it seems contradictory. Because this definitely does seem contradictory.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I said God is both a just and a merciful God, because Abraham had clearly sinned right before this passage. Isaac was born, and all the, but up to that, Abraham took matters into his own hands, and all of a sudden God just said, you know, did what he said he was going to do in the first place. And a sacrifice is payment for sin. It's the just punishment for sin. Abraham knew he had sinned, and so God is asked. God gives him the son that he promised.
As you guys are
but
looking at your view,
messed up so much.
What part of the emphasis,
you know, that,
is missing
that Abraham,
or your aim?
You know, knew that he
and
there was
kind of
a sacrifice necessary, because, you know, going all the way back, and so. But
although how does the passage open?
Trust got inserted.
I don't know.
But maybe if we think about it,
but
why did we say trust?
He trusted,
yeah.
You know, he obeyed. It said God tested
somebody
Abraham.
Somebody said obey,
right.
Somebody added
so
trust.
So he tested his faith to see if
right.
Now he was going to trust him.
Well, it's a test.
That was
not
Mike, I heard you add trust.
Mm-hmm. It's a
yeah,
test.
I was just
not
writing down what you first said.
Okay, yeah. So why did you add trust to obedience?
The only thing I'm pointing is everything you're saying can be true, but within the context of this passage, we're going a little bit.
Yeah. This is the kind
but
of
why would God ask for a sacrifice?
That literally can't
he doesn't
be
explain why.
Yeah.
But historically, up to this point in the Bible, there's a lot about sacrifice and the need for sacrifice.
Right.
In this moment,
a blood sacrifice.
That you need some sort of obedience.
So,
I'm wondering if one of the emphasis is God will provide the sacrifice.
Well, all I'm trying to drill down is when you stay with the passage and the emphasis, try to stay here rather than, because there's a lot of truth that's in this passage,
should we add to sacrifice?
Pull as you are doing from other parts.
Right.
And I think those are like the next steps. It's kind of like more,
you just said lamb,
what's the right in your face,
simplest truth that's happening. And I mentioned this was
I don't know, I just wanna know where God wants a sacrifice. Why would he even ask for a sacrifice? A random event, a random act? No, there's a reason.
I agree with that, I agree with that. And I don't know that the passage addresses it.
I think the only reason we can get is that it's literally a test.
That's a straightforward thing, that we know in the past, right, it's a test.
But we have other examples in the Bible of, we don't know why God allows things to happen. You know, Job is a good example.
As a nation.
We have a little bit of extra context to Job.
Created by God.
But Job certainly didn't know.
He will provide.
He suddenly had a bunch of bad things happen to him.
You say as a nation?
Sure, but God didn't ask Job to do a sacrifice.
No, God just took everything he had.
Because we're.
In other words, God sacrificed everything he had.
In context, not in New Testament, but.
Right.
The audience is.
Then God asking you to perform a ritual that had been laid out for many.
Who was initiated and created by God.
Well, actually, what's interesting is we're gonna hear a lot more about sacrifice.
I think that's an interesting link.
There are a couple examples of sacrifice, but not a lot.
Isaac was clearly created through a miracle act of God.
There's what you had. Cain and Abel.
Created by God.
The entire thing with them was around.
It's about initiation.
Noah.
I'm sorry, I'm just.
Sacrifices.
Initiate creator is synonymous.
I think Abraham has a couple before this point.
Oh, okay.
But I can't think of any other.
The point is, if he started it, he will provide.
I don't think God ever specifically asks for a sacrifice until you get to the law.
And that sentence doesn't draw.
Now, Charlie, to your point.
Let's.
Sacrifice is a huge part of it.
Bring it to.
Okay.
All right, what you got so far? Throw out some sentences.
A good discussion.
All right, let's start with some pieces of the good discussion together.
As we trust and obey God, he will provide all that we need.
All right. We trust and obey. Now, that's interesting, you said all that you need. Is that an extrapolation, or is that? Because what's being provided in this passage? Everything Abraham needs?
The sacrifice.
Or something more specific?
The lamb to the sacrifice.
Maybe instead of all that you need, they'll provide what you need.
So maybe there's an extrapolation that's right. We'll figure it out later. But God's providing a sacrifice. Interesting. You had a good discussion about sacrifice?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Well, the whole... Charlie, go ahead.
Well, my question was, why did God require a sacrifice and not some other kind of test?
Yeah.
And so, biblically, but I was putting the law, that's where I was getting the chronology maybe wrong. Because biblically, a sacrifice in the Old Testament is payment for sin. And Abraham had sinned a lot against God by taking things in his own hands before Isaac was born. So, you know, God then, when Isaac is born in the chapter right before, and then God asks Abraham to sacrifice Isaac.
Yeah, possibly.
So
let's think back.
Wondering if you can tie that all together.
Sacrifice at this point may be tied to sin, because of Genesis 3, right? We find this interesting correlation that when Jesus clothed Adam and Eve, he killed something for it. But it's just sort of hinted at. The next time we hear anything about sacrifice is Noah, where Noah, giving thanks and worshiping God for saving them, offers up.
What about Cain and Abel?
Technically Cain and Abel.
Right, Cain and Abel, sorry, I missed that. Yep. Thank you very much. This is why community. Yeah. Cain and Abel, right? It doesn't even appear, it's not clear that God told them to provide it.
Mm-hmm.
They, out of thanksgiving and worship for God providing for them from the soil or from the flock, mm-hmm. give back to God. It's almost like a tithe, mm-hmm. right? So these are the examples that we have up to this point. Mostly thanksgiving and worship and return of blessing, of thanksgiving.
Yeah, but isn't he talking to people that have a tabernacle and that have regular sacrifices?
Yes, but Isaac wouldn't have been.
No,
and Jacob wouldn't have been.
Audience.
And Joseph. I'm saying all of this was story format. passed down to Moses before that. So I did kind of mislead you a little bit. I said Israel. But even before Israel is a nation, these people have the story of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all of his 12 sons, all the people that are in Egypt have this story and have to be wondering what it means and have to be receiving something out of it probably too.
Well, you can do that too then. You can say sacrifice in that context is a way to give back the blessing that God has given, a way to give it back to God, to give thanks to God.
So you're saying the shedding of blood as a sacrifice wasn't for forgiveness of sin at this point in the Bible?
I'm saying all of it is unclear, probably, to the Israelites. It is all leading up to that, and it is all hinting at it. But it is not clearly,
God does.
I don't think it was clear to Abraham that his sins were being forgiven or anything, but I'm not sure.
Up to this point, there's no law,
no indication of that.
So the opening phrase for the passage is God tested Abraham.
Yeah.
So that seems to be primarily what the story's about, the test.
All right.
So there's a lot of truth in that passage that we know now. But what was the story if you just had the story? And you almost have to erase 90% of the Bible out of your brain and just stay with Genesis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't about necessarily forgiveness of sins, mm-hmm. but it does say worship.
Yes.
It was an act mm-hmm. of worship.
He said he was going to worship, right? Me and my son will go and worship. Mm-hmm. So that is clear.
And Isaac knew that there should be a lamb for a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it seemed to be regular enough of an action
that's good.
That there was specifically a lamb. So that's mm-hmm. that's good. So a lamb is what's expected, possibly from Abel days or Abraham's practice.
I wrote down, God is to be followed even when we do not see a way through.
All right, does anyone want to try to sum up these? We've all given our best shot at it, and then we're going to move into the next section. I think we could spend a lot of time here. But does anyone want to try to sum these up into one bigger piece? Follow it even when we don't see a way. Did I write anything down for this? Yeah, I don't know if mine was any better. I said God demands a sacrifice of the Son of the Promise, and God provides a substitute sacrifice for the Son of the Promise, but I think I'm missing some stuff in there. All right, so I think this is a good one. I think this nuances all the others really well and helps bring the context in. I think this is kind of like a repeat. So yeah. I think this gets at the covenant. So let's try to put it together. Shot.
When Abraham was tested by God and obeyed, he received incredible blessing. Pull the words together.
Well, okay, what's the argument he's making to them? Is it just Abraham, or is he trying to make an argument for them as well? Would you say?
I mean, the key words I'm thinking is obedience, provision, and blessing.
Yeah.
That's good.
Would you say?
Obedience, provision, and blessing.
Yeah.
Okay. Through obedience, maybe not through, but during obedience, God provides. blessing.
Oh, like that.
And the sacrifice. All right, this could be done better, and we can spend more time on this. We'll pause there.
So move.
Now, one of the reasons this isn't good enough, and we all kind of know this instinctively, right? Because we haven't brought Jesus into this. If all we're left with is this, then we might start to think, well, the way to get blessing is obey God, which is true, but then we start leaning into it to try to get blessing out of God by obeying him. And then it becomes more about us and less about a God who provides, right? Yes?
So before we move to Jesus,
yes.
Can I just ask?
Yes.
Because,
do it.
You know, I read this story and I'm like, human sacrifice, pagan.
Yeah. Yes,
you
please.
Know, the people don't seem to be like, you know, did he really hear from God? Is God going to tell me to do this human sacrifice? You know, it just sounds so pagan.
Yeah, let's bring it down to reality, right? Because this is a shocking moment for any parent that has a child. I have a child. So this is definitely something I would throw in the unanswered question. Why did God ask for a human son sacrifice, right? Now, before we get to the answer, I think it's really important to remember that God spoke to Abraham audibly in a way that told him to go from his country to somewhere else. And he had at least six major conversations with God before this, where God formed a covenant with him, where he saw God walking through as a burning pot through his sacrifice that he laid out, that he had seen God work for him and protect him and provide promises and miracles for him. A son through himself, who, as Hebrews says, he was as good as dead, and so is Sarah. And yet he has a son. That son gets protected miraculously in multiple ways. The lion gets protected with Abimelech and with the Egyptian king, as God sort of keeping other men who would have Sarah away from her and blessing Abraham at the same time. In each encounter where Abraham's messing up and not trusting God, God still sends him off with tons of stuff as a blessing. So he's his whole life since he left his homeland has been this conversation with God. And now God asks him to do something that seems directly opposite to everything he's promised. I don't think God's going to ask any of you to sacrifice your sons or daughters, right? But he may ask you to do something that feels contrary to everything that you feel like is supposed to be happening in a way. And when I say ask you, I mean love your neighbor or love your enemy. And how do you do that in a way that doesn't feel right at the moment?
I've heard they used to talk about it as like death of a vision. You know, God is giving you this vision, and then now he's asking you to lay it on the altar, you know, for him.
Yeah.
And, I can understand all that. It's just the whole human sacrifice, yeah. And they're not like, I don't know.
I think what you might be getting at is it does appear that God is asking Abraham to sin, like murder.
But I'm getting at here, yeah.
I think what she's getting at is it looks like God is requesting sin from Abraham.
Just for me, it's just so pagan.
Right. And the Bible doesn't record up to this point, but obviously later on in the Bible, we do have pagan religions sacrificing children.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so I'm like, well, was this a thing back then? And so that's why he's heard of this before.
When there are prophets who are called to walk naked. You know, so I mean, there are certain times when God is doing something like, okay, that wouldn't fit in the, you know.
Right.
So I think you're just hitting the reality, which is going to hit the reality of everybody, of just this filter of, wow, this doesn't align.
Right. So. Well, and also you got to remember in this passage, God stopped the sacrifice, never actually required that it go through with it, too. So
right.
It wasn't.
But Abraham doesn't know that at the time God's requesting it.
No.
But he does say that God will provide the sacrifice.
Yeah.
Maybe believing in his heart that God wasn't really going to have them.
What it says in Hebrews is that Abraham considered that God was even able to raise Isaac from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
So in Abraham's mind, he is holding two things. He knows that the promises through Isaac, that there's going to be blessing to the nation. And it's been confirmed many times through miraculous events in his own life, and he's been asked to sacrifice it, and he doesn't know how they're going to combine, but Abraham's version of it is, well, God can raise Isaac from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got, and I'm going with it.
Right, because if he had this in the back of his mind, well, at the last minute God will provide something else, that's not really
right.
Being willing to
right.
sacrifice.
Yeah,
right.
That's like, I'm willing to go up to the last minute.
I think the reason God did it and asked for human sacrifice, and it's notable that he never asked for human sacrifice from this point on, ever, and ever goes through with it. And he says it's abominable, it's the practices of the nations. But the reason he did it in this way with this son is to prepare us for when God is going to sacrifice his own son.
Right.
Right.
And how are we to understand it? We're to understand it that these lambs, these rams, they're not enough. God is asking for something way higher than the sacrifice of an animal. Whatever his offering requires, whatever his sacrifice requires human blood and death. And he's just hinted at it here. And he's just said, it's going to happen. It's going to happen with the son. And it's just, you're just kind of stunned left, like, I don't know how this works, but I'm just going to follow God and obey him in these animal sacrifices, knowing they're probably not enough. And God even says that later to his prophets. So that when the time that Jesus comes around on the scene, you're ready that Jesus can actually become the lamb as a human sacrifice. And you're like, oh, Abraham, that's why.
And also the audience just experienced the 10th plague where the firstborn son of, all of Egypt was killed. So
yes, one of the audiences
in there.
I wouldn't use the word just because, again, this story comes through
right. One of the audiences. Yeah.
But Abraham was really the only one that that understood that Isaac was supposed to be the sacrifice.
Yeah.
I don't think the people with him traveling up kind of was putting all that together.
No, I think that's why he left him behind, one of the reasons.
Yeah.
That's a really good question. And these kind of questions, I think, are good to ask because they do point you to why is God doing this, and they will lead you to something more amazing. And they will prepare it. So let's keep a great question. Let's keep going. Charlotte, Jeff, especially, and then everyone else. Types, New Testament passage, and themes. Can you write them down?
What did you say?
What types did you find in the passage? What New Testament passages were referenced in your passage? And what themes did you see that are sort of like biblical themes that are constantly getting expounded?
So Isaac is a type of Jesus being sacrificed as the Lamb of God.
Isaac.
John 1:29.
Lamb of God. And Jesus. All right, what did you say, John 1:29?
Yeah. Which is his only son, the Lamb of God.
I put down Hebrews 11:19.
All right, read it.
Let me look it up again.
Mm-hmm.
he considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. Just in case, referring to this specific story and calling Isaac specifically a type of Jesus.
Okay, yes. Good. So that leads you to Jesus being sacrificed and raised. All right, other types?
I have down Abraham as kind of a type of God, the Father in this case.
Good.
Pointing to... Oh, I also wrote down John 1:29 referring to the life of God.
Okay. How? So let's. Dad, you did a whole prayer post on this.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that? Abraham, God the Father. Send it out to the group.
I'm totally blanking.
All right. One other. You were trying to figure out where are we in the story, right?
Yeah.
And there's these two characters with the donkey. Don't do anything in the story.
They okay.
get referred to twice, and it's kind of like weird. Like, what are these
okay.
characters doing? They're not doing anything. They're kind of just sitting there watching, standing there with a donkey, waiting. And there's this great moment where, as the climax of the story is getting focused, it says that both of them went together, Abraham and Isaac. And then Isaac asked that question, where's the lamb? Who's going to provide the lamb? And Abraham says, God will provide the lamb for the sacrifice. And then it says, then they went, both of them, together. So it's parallel. And in it, you can almost see God the Father and God the Son off together. And these two people, these two characters that are with the donkey, are the people. And we're kind of like the people in this story more than anyone else. We're not like Abraham, really, except in the testing sense. And we're not like Isaac very much either, except in the sense of being substituted for. So we're just watching a father and a son off to worship, getting a sacrifice. So anyways, you can try to explain it, defend it later,
or now. The main point was, when Chad brought up that every person is important, that brings up in the passage, I'm sitting there looking at these two young men. And I'm like, why are they in the passage? Because they're in the passage. And they're not just setting. And so when you look at them, what stands out about them is they do nothing. They do nothing. I mean, they are just like a wall, you know? They're with them. Abraham talks to them. We're going. We're coming back. And then they come back to the people. And so in that striking non-involvement, I'm saying, oh my goodness. And then you see Abraham and Isaac, and it's a beautiful picture when it says, so they went both of them together. And so you see a father and a son going to accomplish a work apart from anybody else. And it's just like, that's what they did. Like, the father and the son said, we're going to make salvation happen without men.
Part of that, you looked at Isaac and you were like, how did Isaac not agree to this?
Yes.
Because Abraham is over 100 years old. Isaac is strong enough to carry a whole bundle of wood on his back. So he's not a 5-year-old.
Right.
Right? He's a strong young man and could have stopped his father from tying him up. Mm-hmm. Isaac had to be somewhat compliant with this process, was your deduction from that. Or trusting, right? So, anyways. We'll leave that in the maybe category, and let's think about it. It's, you know, I don't think it's the main point or anything, but it's a beautiful idea. I don't know. Other types, other passages, other themes. Where's Brandon? Where's that Mount Moriah thing you brought up?
there is one in James 2:21. Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar?
Justified. Yep. Good. These are going to be really important when it comes to application for us. Go.
Where is that James? What?
2:21.
Yeah. Any other types you got of seeing?
Well,
I know there's more characters in the story.
Yeah.
Jeff, come on, you wrote down like 50 characters.
Not, I didn't see any like explicit types because in a lot of cases.
I mean, the donkey was a character in your passage, so I know.
I did write that down. I mean, I have a lot of connections with this in the gospel, but not types as such.
The ram, maybe?
Actually, yeah, the ram's there with essentially caught by its horns in thorns, reflecting Jesus' crown of thorns. Potentially a bit of a stretch.
Maybe.
That's cool.
Why not?
If you read the Old why not, right? If you read the Old Testament narrative guide, they do warn to be cautious with allegorizing, because it might be true.
Yeah.
But let's find a little more evidence before we jump at it, because people did this all the time for like a few hundred years, and it was just like everything they saw, they were just like, oh, come and think of my thorns, crown of thorns. But maybe honestly, that's interesting. That's a little tighter than a lot of the other things. All right, so ram possibly, so Lamb of God. I had this question of why a ram and not a lamb.
I was just going to say that. It wasn't. A ram is potentially, because it's a specific gender, whereas a lamb is not.
Oh. Interesting. I like it, that thought.
At least in the English. I don't know if that comes forward in the Hebrew.
Yeah, it doesn't take a bit of Hebrew words and guesses. All right. Other New Testament passage. Hey, for anyone that's not, didn't read it or didn't do this, what other passages does this even remind you of? Genesis 22. And do we have any themes?
I just kept seeing only son, obviously, but as a theme. But the interesting thing I noticed is that the only people using the phrase only son is God and the angel of the Lord. Abraham himself and the author do not use the phrase to refer to Isaac.
That's interesting. So
if it's God and the angel saying it, then you know it's important.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And he repeatedly says it too. It's like almost every time God refers to Isaac, he interjects only son.
Yeah, he was the son of promise.
Yes.
Well, Abraham maybe doesn't see him as the only son. Because he wasn't his only son, right?
Ishmael is, as well. Mm-hmm. Like God sees him as, That might be part of it. Another part of it probably is God being compassionate to Abraham. He knows this is his only child, son of the promise, that he loves and cares about. Is Ishmael gone by now? Ishmael's gone.
Yep.
Yeah, Ishmael's been sent away.
Yep. I think we brought this up earlier, but Isaac has no recorded objection to any of this, just as Jesus does not have any objection in front of Pilate and the Sanhedrin. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a strong connection.
Well, if you're going to have the theme of sacrifice, I keep thinking of Hebrews chapter 10, where it talks about Christ sacrificed once for all, and how the sacrifices that were offered previous to that were impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins.
Yeah.
So then Christ came. So that's why the son.
Yes.
Another interesting one. Only son takes me to John 3:16.
Yep. There it goes. What is John 3:16?
Seriously.
Not everyone remembers what the verse is necessarily the reference. For God so loved the world
that he gave his only son.
He gave his only son.
Whoever believes in him, not perish.
Yes.
Just to continue to strengthen the Isaac to Jesus connection, Isaac carrying the wood mirrors Christ carrying the cross in John 19:17.
Good. I love these. These are great. Sometimes I don't want to get. No. Stop. We might have to continue this next time.
What about the mountain?
Yes. Bring up the mountain. I've been waiting for the. Brandon was like talking about all of that, and I was like, all right. And then now he's not here.
Right. So he's supposed to offer him up a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you.
Okay. Which mountain?
Moriah.
All right. Where does Moriah show up?
Moriah is where the temple ends up being built, so it's where Jerusalem is.
Okay, which is also the spot of
Jesus' crucifixion.
And
Herod's temple.
And
trial.
I'm looking for a David connection.
Where David sacrificed to stop a plague.
I know everybody knows this story, laughing out loud. Born in the Jebusite. No. All right. If you look at Moriah and you go to the temple, right, you have Solomon building the temple. And he says he built it at the place that his father had said to, that was owned by Ornan the Jebusite. And then if you look up that, you go to David, who has numbered his fighting men. Uh-huh. Against everyone's desires, including God's. And God's about to judge Israel, and he's actually in the act of doing so, and yeah. People are dying.
There's an angel with a big sword.
Yes. And David...
And he can't go to the usual sacrifice place, because yes. The angel is standing there.
David can't go to where the usual sacrifice, because the angel's standing there with a sword. He says he was afraid, because there's an angel with a sword there. And he's like, I got a sacrifice right here, right now. And he makes that the spot of which David actually takes on the punishment of the people. He says, spare these sheep. Interestingly enough, I will take the punishment. So you have David acting in a sort of messianic role of...
Substitute.
Substitution, yeah. I don't know how to spell this stuff. Substitution. At the spot of the temple. And this gets really exciting to me, because at this spot, you have the Messiah acting as a substitute to defend the people of God. You have the temple being built there, and the sacrifices of the people by the high priest being atoned for at this location. You have Abraham sacrificing Isaac, a really strange question, really strange request that seems really against us, at this location, so that when Jesus comes to the scene and dies here in Jerusalem, in Moriah, maybe at the mountain, you know, it's a little loose, but he's here at Jerusalem in the land of Moriah, being sacrificed as an only son, atoning for sin as the high priest, standing in the place of the people as a shepherd, as the Messiah. And I'm sure a better version of this was taught on the road to Emmaus as the disciples are walking with Jesus and he's hearing them saying, oh, I should have seen it. It's all here. And now, okay, well, we haven't got to today at all, so we're going to do all of this next class, is talk about application. Because usually, often what we stop at, or I stop at, is... You see something, like Isaac, you're like, oh, that's Jesus, right? Or Abraham, oh, that's God the Father. And then sometimes we stop, and the question is, what does it mean for us? So what the New Testament writers do is they see a passage. So let's take Hebrews for a second as an example of how to do this. Let's bring up Hebrews. What was the 10 one? Someone wrote up Hebrews 10, right? No, Hebrews 11. Let's go to Hebrews 11. In the 1 minute we have left.
You can start at verse 17 for to think that.
11:17. All right. What is said right before this is, these all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar. Example, Abraham. He was promised to be the multitude of nations and dies with only one child. His name means father of many, Abram. And it gets changed to Abraham, father of multitudes, and he still is dead with one child. Didn't see it. Not yet. Having greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth, Abraham's whole life. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. as it is, they desire a better country that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead. So this whole passage and the ones that follow it are examples of people who have not received everything that was promised to them. That includes all of you, because God has promised you all kinds of things that we have not received yet, because we're not in heaven and we haven't seen him face to face, right? And we are desiring a better country, a heavenly one. So the application for us, in as we're looking at Abraham as an example, which is what we're allowed to do because it says for us to do it here, is that we should be seeking a better home and a better country, and that will enable us to do things like have faith in God now. That was sloppily done. But do you see how the connection is? Looking at Abraham's life, what gave Abraham the faith to sacrifice his only son? He believed that God was able to raise him from the dead. He believed God strongly, he trusted him, and he was seeking a better reward and country.
And that goes back to Sandra's point, I think, when she's talking about, you can read this and say, what kind of God would require the sacrifice of his only son? That engenders horror in people, the idea of doing, of giving your only son as a sacrifice to God. Yeah. But as when you see the whole picture, God provides that sacrifice and actually provides his only son for us. And that makes God look so much bigger and more amazing and more wonderful. Because we know what it cost him to do it.
I think it does, yeah. Not everyone's going to see that. But I think I totally agree. Yeah.
It is interesting in Hebrews that the author does say offered instead of almost offered.
All right, so for next time, try to grab all the things you've seen and ask yourself, okay, what is the pattern for us to follow? Well, what does this mean for me now? If Isaac is a type, and here it is, he's carrying his cross, he's not objecting, he's the Lamb of God, what does that mean for you now? That's next week.